Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Dedicated and loving parents, one of five brothers and sisters. A home where we as children were the focus of my parents' lives, where we regularly attended church. Two Christian parents who did not drink, they did not smoke, there was no gambling, there was no physical abuse or fighting in the home. That basically, I was a normal person. I wasn't some guy hanging out at bars or a bum. I wasn't a pervert in the sense that, you know, people look at somebody and say, I know there's something wrong with them, and just tell. I mean, I was essentially a normal person. I had good friends. I led a normal life, except for this one small but very potent and very destructive segment of it that I kept very secret, very close to myself, and didn't let anybody know about it. And part of the shock and horror for my dear friends and family years ago when I was first arrested was that there was no clue. They looked at me and they looked at the All-American boy.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Spring Hill, Josh, and the Illumimami herself, Ms. April. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Ted Bundy. December, at least right now it is. It's cold.
The chilly winds of December.
Which means we're drawing close to the end of this season, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Which means we got a heavy hitter. We got a doozy and then some. This is the biggest... one of the biggest episodes I think we could do as far as serial killers. I can't think of anybody more famous. Maybe Dahmer, but maybe about the same. Gacy, Dahmer, Bundy. It's kind of like the South Dakota Mount Everest of serial killers.
I have three of them in my final four bracket.
Oh, right. Well, you're the one that's leading right now. So Theodore Robert Bundy. That's who we're talking about today. Which I guess we're going to do a real quick kind of truth cornery thing here. Mm-hmm. Pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road. As far as serial killers go, how creepy do we think this guy is?
I would say he's a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say 10. Unassuming male serial killers are like pretty high up on my list. And,
I mean... is it just me, or is he's a pretty handsome fella?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got crazy eyes, though.
Like, yeah, he definitely does.
Has the crazy eyes.
What do you think, Larry?
Let's see. You have an 8. You carry over the handsomeness. It gets it to a 9. Plus, he gets a bonus point for fucking corpses. 10.
I'm going to go 10 as well. I think the creepiest part was really watching him react to the jury sentencing, which we'll get to later. I think that was like the one moment people actually got to see what he was really like when he handled.
I always find it fascinating. Like, he always brought up how proper and conservative he was brought up. Like,
right.
Like it matters at that point.
Like, he's like, I was the all American boy. You know, I was having sex with dead women and, you know, just really.
But I was married to
her. Yeah, right.
I was faithful to that one dead body I fucked.
Right. Of course. So, Theodore Robert Bundy was born Theodore Robert Cowell, November 24th, 1946.
That's today. November 24th.
No, it's December, Larry.
Well, if we had recorded this a week earlier, yes. No, you're right. He's totally right.
I know I'm right.
That's shit. Insane.
Wow. This is creepy.
I didn't even think about that
Happy birthday.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
We recorded this episode on Ted Bundy's birthday, and we just realized.
What year was it? Was he
1946.
Born? 1946.
Wow.
Math is not
43, you said? And 43.
Yeah, 73.
Yeah. Woohoo! Happy birthday, Bundy!
Yeah! Happy birthday, you piece of shit.
I hope Madonna jumps out of a cake for him.
See, the problem is right now the listeners aren't even concerned with that. They're like, Ryan lied. This podcast is wrong.
Oh, I thought you said I'm going to stab at you too.
I hope you're having fun in hell, buddy. So anyway, he was an American serial killer. Bundy murdered numerous young women across the United States between 1974 and 1978. He twice escaped from prison before his final apprehension in February of 1978. After more than a decade of vigorous denials, he eventually confessed to 30 murders although the actual total of victims remains unknown, estimated range from 29 to over 100.
Wow.
The general estimate being 35. Typically, Bundy would bludgeon his victims, then strangle them to death. He also engaged in rape and necrophilia.
Is that a pan?
That was a young Bundy there, actually. Mm-hmm. Speaking of young, our friend of the show, that's right, Mr. Jenkins, intern Jenkins, if you will.
Intern.
did some proper work for us here, and he dug up a little info about the childhood of Ted Bundy, so we can get into this whole beginning. Now, like we said, he was born November 24th, which would put him, and he did the research for us, at the age of 73. So there you go. Good job, Josh. Theodore Cowell was born in a home for unwed mothers.
Oh boy.
In Burlington, Vermont, to his mother, Eleanor Louise Cowell. Originally, Louise, as she was known, wanted to put Theodore up for adoption, but her father wanted him to be part of the family. Ted was raised being told that his mother was his sister and his grandparents were his parents. Now, I actually heard that Jack Nicholson went through something similar, too, growing up. Which, I mean...
He has crazy eyes, too.
He does kind of have crazy... I mean, shit, Shining, he really sells it, so... Mm-hmm. I just think that could kind of pertain to the soup, serial killer soup that's happening here. I mean, I don't know. Ted later told famed author Ann Rule, who actually worked with him at a 911 operator call center. Or actually, it wasn't a call center for 911. It was like suicide prevention for people. Rule that he saw through the ruse, stating that he easily figured out that a 20-year difference between siblings was not normal. But then again, that could also be his control thing. Like he wants it to make it seem like he knows everything type of thing. Outside the home, things appeared normal, though. Internally, there was strife. Ted's grandmother suffered from depression and agoraphobia, and his grandfather was known to have an extreme temper. Cats, dogs, employees, and family members were all targets of Ted's grandfather's violent acts. Some believe that Ted was a result of his grandfather raping his mother. Which, I mean, that adds another spice to that soup. Though there has never been any evidence or testimony given to the rape allegations or any physical abuse done to Ted by anyone who is... hold on just a second. Were you going to ask a question?
Yeah, Josh? Is this according to Ted that the rape happened?
No.
Okay. Because no. I was just wondering if that, like, that was him saying that his grandpa married or raped his mom because can't trust a guy who's
already right. I know, I get that. So anyway, one instance of disturbing behavior by Ted is that his aunt claimed years later to have woken up to find her toddler nephew placing knives near where she was sleeping. Ooh. Which was like, Ted, you're up. You want some cheese? Is that what it is? You'd cut a pie, maybe?
No, mother.
When Ted was 3, his mother moved them both from Philadelphia to Tacoma, Washington. She gave him the last name of Nelson so as to not draw attention to his illegitimacy before they left. The move upset little Ted very much, and he became very upset with his mother when his mother started to date Johnny Bundy, an army hospital cook. Which, thank you for your service. Johnny and Louise married in 1951, and despite many tantrums and his definitive dislike of Johnny, Johnny legally adopted Ted as his legal son and gave him the last name that would later send chills down the spines of college co-eds coast to coast. That was a nice slant, Mr. Jenkins. Ted and his stepfather never really got along. Ted always looked down on him as Johnny could not afford to give Ted the lavish things he wanted and would often fantasize about Roy Rogers adopting him so he could have all the fun things he wanted. Sounds like one of those kids that's just like assumes he's deserving of
an entitled prick.
Yeah, basically. As he got older, Ted's disdain moved from his income to his intelligence. Ted would often provoke his stepfather and talk down to him until Johnny would strike out at Ted in frustration. Ted overall had less anger at his mother as he recognized that she did everything she could to provide basic care for him. However, she had 4 more children and his illegitimacy was a particularly sore spot that angered him for years and he would often obsess over it. Now, I have not the same situation, but like my siblings are, I'm related to, but they're of a different father. Mm-hmm. So I kind of know what that can feel like because there were definitely moments where I would look at my stepdad and think like, I'm not like the other two. So why? But eventually you figure out that they love you just the same. If not, I mean,
Andy is my half brother.
Yeah.
Same mom. And my sister is my half sister. Same mom. But Andy and Chrissy,
you're close.
All different dads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
As a child, Bundy lacked the charm that he would later use to lure victims into his web. He was often teased for having a speech impediment and had a hard time keeping up with his fellow Boy Scouts. He was not. Did anybody hear a Boy Scout or Girl Scout? Jesus, that was
inextricably.
You've been combing through season 3 lately, or though those.
I mean, but did he?
This is all the last episode.
Allegorical.
He was not a bad athlete, but not make either the baseball or basketball team in high school. He performed well in his academics, but never reached the top of class. Overall, he was just plain average. As for romance, he only went on 1 date in high school, later saying that it wasn't that he didn't like girls. He just didn't know what to do with them. He had a few good friends and took jobs like delivering newspapers and cutting lawns. He went to church regularly and became the Methodist Youth Fellowship's vice president. He also saved the life of a friend's niece who was drowning.
Oh, good guy.
All this while covering up a deep, dark, deep, dark secret.
He played Dungeons and Dragons.
Hey, man, I do too. Some of Bundy's childhood behavior would go past awkwardness, though. He liked to dig tiger traps around the neighborhood by digging holes, placing sharpened stakes in it, then covering the opening with vegetation. It was reported that at least one neighborhood girl's leg was badly injured by falling into one of these. He loved pulp detective stories, particularly the descriptions of rape and murder, which actually Ed Gein was big into those, like adventure comics and stuff like that, which we'll get into when we cover Mr. Gein.
Oh, boy.
I was into Detective Comics.
This detective's got a rape fantasy, I think.
Fantasizing about rape.
Interesting. It is also believed that he discovered pornography well before his teens, most likely discovering... often looking at his grandfather's collection before the age of three. Bundy was known to masturbate in closets of his junior high school and began
what?
And being doused with water by his classmates whenever he was caught. So he sounds like he's like a compulsive masturbator.
Yeah.
Bundy, are you in there? Somebody spray him with water. Don't do it after midnight. I hear he multiplies. Bundy. Okay. So like we said, that is a fact I did not know. Thank you, intern Jenkins. So, known as a very good skier, by the way, Bundy started to steal ski equipment, which is one of, I mean, there's the trifecta, the bedwetting, the head injury, mm-hmm. harm to animals. But this is, stealing is always one that I hear a lot, mm-hmm. which I think should be part of that, the compulsion to do that sort of thing. He would steal equipment he could not afford. He would also forge lift tickets for various ski resorts in his area. He once attempted to steal a car and was caught, most disturbingly as a teen. Bundy became a peeping Tom, which is another common precursor.
Which is an got the beginning of page three now.
Which is a common precursor to sexual violence. Bundy's first known murder victim was killed in 1974. But he may be linked to the disappearance of an 8-year-old in 1961.
This took a weird turn.
When Bundy was 14 years old, Anne Marie Burr disappeared from her Tacoma home in the middle of the night. As everyone was home at the time of the abduction, it is reasoned that Anne knew her abductor. Popular theory is that Bundy had met her while delivering papers or while visiting his uncle who lived in the neighborhood. Bundy also denied responsibility for the disappearance, even after Anne's mother wrote him a letter. While he was on death row asking for closure, Bundy always hinted at more victims until his dying day. However, there is no evidence, DNA or otherwise, that has ever linked Bundy to the site of the abduction. And that is how we start this bad bear. Now we're going to get into the murders.
Kind of hoping to avoid that part.
I know, but I appreciate that info. It is hard to cover this much ground. And I don't want to say I took all my info mostly from Murderpedia, which does have, which is like Wikipedia, but moita.
I think I might check that Murderpedia.com.
Yeah. You can Google it. It's every single serial killer you can think of. So anyway, now we're going to talk about Washington State. No one knows exactly where and when Bundy began killing. Many Bundy experts, including Ann Rule and former King County detective Robert D. Keppel, believe Bundy may have started killing as far back as his early teens, like we brought up with Anne Marie Burr. In 1973, one of Bundy's Republican Party friends saw a pair of handcuffs in the back of Bundy's Volkswagen, which, by the way, he was a Republican guy. He, in fact, the guy that he worked with that was he was campaigning for, like, had nothing but positive things to say about him. It's just like Anne Rule, who worked with him at the call center. She said he would walk her out to the car and make sure that she got there safely and then test the like literally say, please just drive straight home. There's crazy guys out there.
Oh, he was
weird
being a nice
that
guy.
He like who he picked and didn't pick. It's just so
well, just think about the yin yang going on. I think people like that. That's a way for him to give himself permissions. Like, it's OK.
I'm a good guy.
His eyes are just like spinning, like fucking.
Well, I think
I'm a good guy.
He's like the judge from Who Framed Roger
exactly.
Rabbit. Which that's a good point though that Larry brought up, like the fact that there are some people that he probably just looked at as a piece of meat.
Others that he viewed as precious friends.
Well, yeah. We'll get into that because, like, he did have a girlfriend in college.
I just can't even imagine those people after it came out. Imagine being that person to know that you were alone with him all those times.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So shortly after midnight, Now, like I said, the guy in the Republican Party saw the handcuffs in the back of Bundy's Volkswagen. He was for many years a suspect in December 73 murder of Kathy Devine in Washington State. But DNA analysis led to another man's arrest and conviction for the crime in 2002. Bundy's earliest known identified murders were committed in 74 when he was 27, which is when most rock stars die.
This one was born.
God.
Shortly after midnight on January 4th, 1974, Bundy entered the basement bedroom of an 18-year-old Joni Lentz, pseudonym, a dancer and a student at University of Washington. Bundy, oh God, bludgeoned her with a metal rod from her bed. Okay, all right. I painted a picture there. While she slept and sexually assaulted her with a speculum, which is, I think those are the things that open up.
Those are
cavities.
Like the duck bills that go into your vagina.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
And you crank them open like the windshield or the window in the old cars.
No.
God damn it. I knew it was coming.
Cassie, what are you doing here?
All right. This is terrible. These are horrific. So she survived the attack, but suffered permanent brain damage. Bundy's next victim was Linda Ann Healy, another University of Washington student and his cousin's roommate. In the early morning hours of February 1st, 1974, Bundy broke into Healy's room, knocked her unconscious, dressed her in jeans and a shirt, wrapped her in a bedsheet, and carried her away. Coeds began disappearing at a rate of roughly one a month on March 12th,
damn,
1974 in Olympia. Bundy kidnapped and murdered Donna Gail Manson, a 19-year-old student at the Evergreen State College. And this wasn't a matter of him doing this because her last name was Manson. He actually had a girlfriend in college, and I think her name has been. It's one of those things where it's like it is also a pseudonym. Like we don't know who mm-hmm. it is, but her name was like Jessica or something, and she was of wealth. And he was like he was as in love as a serial killer can mm-hmm. be with somebody because she was from privilege, but because he had this fucking loopy dupe gaze and wasn't focused and wasn't driven and was basically just a fucking cutout of a human. Mm-hmm. He had the ability to speak, yes, but underneath that was nothing. She kind of realized, you know, him courting her, like he probably wasn't worth a damn. And I'm sure her dad noticed mm-hmm. because she blew him off. But then he played the game and tried to get her back. And in fact, they got engaged. No joke. And when she said yes, that's when the game was done because he had won her and he disappeared. He left her hanging. Wow. She called him and said, Ted, what the fuck is going on? We're engaged, right? And he's like, Jessica, I have no idea what you're talking about, and hung up.
What a weirdo.
And her hair, long, dark, split in the middle, was the common description of the victims that he killed.
Oh, so you'd be okay, April.
Yeah.
Yes, you would. In fact, there was a report of a woman that came out in the last 3 years of a blonde that escaped him. Mm-hmm. The only reason that she survived is because when she took her hat off, she didn't have the same length of split in the middle brown hair she had before. She had just cut it. And he said, you are so... this is like legit. She was recounting this and he was like, you are so fucking lucky that you cut your hair and like let her out. Wow. That's not even a joke.
Yikes.
I gotta post the thing on the Facebook group, but I know a few things about this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
Yeah!
I know. What is a serial killer nerd? It's, you get the slash noise and then nerd.
Yeah.
Nerd.
Perfect.
I'm still kind of darkly laughing about the honk noise. It's the duck bill thing people like to stick in their orifices.
Get out of here, Daffy.
So, anyway, on April 17th, 1974, Susan Rancourt disappeared from the campus of Central Washington State College. And Ellensburg later, two different CWSC co-eds would recount meeting a man with his arm in a cast. Now, this was his big move, was to try to put things into his car and ask for help. Mm-hmm. And it works. I mean, it's also very famously in that scene in Silence of the Lambs when the guy is can you help me with this couch? And then eventually it's like, it puts the lotion on, you know, like the way that whole thing goes down. I'm obviously those things are modeled after real life serial killers. Mm-hmm. And this guy is definitely the type to, he's the unassuming, although crazy in the eyes. Mm-hmm. So continuing on, he would have asked help to carry a load of books into his Volkswagen Beetle, which actually I saw a picture of. It was in a, there was a Crime and Punishment Museum for a short amount of time before they were like, should we be promoting crime and punishment?
Yeah.
But that was one of like the big things, was it was behind a, like a, one of those velvet rope things. Mm-hmm. And it's like creepy and just obviously
something you probably shouldn't be advertising.
No. Next was Kathy Parks, last seen on the campus of Oregon State University in Corvell, Oregon on May 6, 1974. Brenda Ball was never seen again after leaving the Flame Tavern in Buren. On June 1st, 1974, Bundy then murdered Georgiana Hawkins, a student at University of Washington and a member of Kappa Alpha Theta, an on-campus sorority. In the early morning hours of June 11th, 1974, she walked through an alley from her boyfriend's dormitory residence to her sorority house. She was never seen again.
Uh-huh.
And he would do that. Like his, like you said, I'm glad we brought up the Peeping Tom thing. He would just watch women. And mm-hmm. if they were his type, that he would strike. I mean, even the girl that he got that I told you about in a recent interview, who had recently been interviewed by like Inside Edition or whatever place was trying to make that easy serial killer money. Mm-hmm. Like she was talking about like the fact that he had been watching her and seen her, and she like, he would pick them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the scary thing, is that there's people that do this sort of thing. So Bundy's Washington killing spree culminated on July 14th, 1974 with the daytime abduction of Janice Ott and Denise Naslin from Lake Sammish State Park in Issaquah. That day,
Issaquah?
Issaquah? Issaquah. Right?
Yeah.
Come on, guys. I'm not always...
There's a it's from Blippi. That's the only reason I know that, is because Blippi goes to a... Never mind.
Wow. You learned Blippi. Something from Blippi.
Fuck
that,
Blippi.
That day, get this, that day, eight different people told the police about the handsome young man with his left arm in a sling who called himself Ted. Which is like, come on, dude. Your name is fucking Ted. Now, he did have aliases, which I'll bring up later. Like,
such as Ted and Ted.
And Theodore and
Ted. Hi, my name's Fur Ted. Fuck, I can't even lie. It's like that movie that hasn't even come out yet. Five of them were women whom Ted asked for help unloading a sailboat from his Beetle. One of them went with Ted as far as his car.
Hold on. A sailboat from his Beetle?
Volkswagen Beetle.
How do you fit a fucking sailboat in a Beetle?
On the
Maybe
top?
It was really small. Maybe it's one of those like paper boats. Can you help me with my paper boat?
I have a schooner. And
it's way back there behind the seat. One of them went with Ted as far as his car, where there was no sailboat, before declining to accompany him any further. Good job. Three more witnesses testified to seeing him approach Ott, who is the last name of one of them. The story about the sailboat and to seeing her walk away from the beach in his company. She was never seen alive again. Naslin disappeared without a trace 4 hours later. King County detectives, now to description, both of the suspect, his car and his boat. Some witnesses told investigators that the Ted they encountered spoke with a clipped British-like accent.
Hello.
I think he's got... Soon flyers were up all over the Seattle area. After seeing the police sketch and description of the Lake Sammish suspect in both of the local newspapers and on television news reports, Bundy's girlfriend, which he did have a common girlfriend the whole time, which is part of the shockingly evil, vile, and corrupt whatever movie that came out with him on Netflix, which I have to say isn't very good.
No?
I watched it, but Bundy is, look, Zac Efron is cut out of fucking steel marble. Handsome.
I think those are two different materials.
I don't know.
Steel marble.
I'm too stupid to be able. He's okay. You've got an Adonis. Like, this guy is like stupid.
Zac Efron. Yeah.
Stupid, good looking, playing Ted Bundy, who's handsome, but he's also kind of
awkward.
He's a serial killer nerd.
I think it's because we know he's a serial killer. That's what taints it. Because when I look at him, it's like, he's a good-looking dude.
Right.
If you think, oh yeah, but he killed a lot of people, that's when you're like, you know what? It's kind of like looking at an attractive girl or a good looking man.
Why did you gesture at Ryan when he said that?
Because I don't know. I'm just saying, like, anytime you see somebody who's attractive, that's your first thought, is they're attractive. But then if you find out they got a little bit of the crazies in them, we know people that are like this.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're.
That immediately, you're like, you just went from like a nine down to a four because of the crazies.
Yeah.
I was married to that for a long time. I know what that's like.
So, I don't know. I just think I look at Ted and I'm like, yeah, he's a good looking dude.
Yeah, I guess I can understand that. But my thing is that, like, there's like sequences where he's having sex and he's got like a 24 pack. And I'm like, Ted Bundy did not look like that. And meanwhile, Zach's just like he's got that Tom Cruise face. You just kind of want to, like, even if he's great in it, you're like, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. Yeah, you can do everything, can't you, Zach?
That kind of portrayed him in a positive way, didn't it?
Yeah, because that's the thing is, and I don't ever want us to come off this way. Like, even talking about that murder, that initial, like, hitting with the bed post rail, like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible. And these are poor, defenseless people who were attacked in their homes.
In their sleep.
And then treated horribly. And mm-hmm. he also took, like, one of those aerosol, like, hairspray cans and shoved it right inside of them. He has a thing, not just about necrophilia, but, like, degrading the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, chewing on it, biting off nipples, shoving post, like, things in there. Like, there is obviously... It's not just to me when he's talking, like, and he's very relatively eloquent speaking when he's talking about things. He's like, yeah, you know, pornography, Dr. Dobson, in his last interview before he died. That definitely, you know, that's where the rape fantasies came in. And when I see what's on TV nowadays, you know, I can only imagine what. Okay. I don't remember the last porno necessarily that I watched, but I definitely don't remember somebody getting all their clothes ripped off and not agreeing to it and then getting their face fucking pummeled. I've never seen any porno where somebody gets beat that bad. It's just like, it's just crazy to me to think that you can blame it on something like that. But anyway, I think it's a
party of personal responsibility,
right?
And he takes none.
Exactly. Yep. I think that's a lot of it, especially when it comes down to his confession tapes, which we'll talk about when we get to it. He can hardly say it because admitting guilt. I mean, there are moments in his trial where he could have gotten out of the death penalty. Mm-hmm. His ego superseded all of that because there's no way anyone but him is going to write the story of his life, even when he got caught red-handed.
Yeah, put up the murders about 25 years later, and they would have blamed video games.
Now, the King County detectives now had description both of the suspect and his car because of this Lake Sammish thing. Some witnesses told investigators that Ted they encountered spoke with a clipped British accent, which I brought up. Soon, flyers were all up over the Seattle area. After seeing the police sketch and description of the Lake Sammish suspect in both of the local newspapers and on television news reports, Bundy's girlfriend, one of his psychological professors at University of Washington, and former co-worker Ann Rule, who I brought up before, all reported him as a possible suspect.
Wow.
Mm.
The police receiving up to 200 tips per day did not pay any special attention to him. Now, working in that call center, like, he was privy to all those tips. Mm-hmm. And even though they would say, like, yeah, you know, we think he's this, this, and the other thing, there were people that he worked with who all vied for him the first time he went to prison. They were like, Ted didn't do it. And they actually had a fundraiser to raise funds to get him out. Like, he was a wolf in sheep's clothing of the highest order. So, the fragmented remains of Ott and Naslin were discovered on September 7th, 1974, off Interstate 90 near Issaquah, 1 mile from the park. Found along with the woman's remains were an extra femur bone and vertebrae, which Bundy would identify as that of a Georgiana Hawkins shortly before his execution. Between March 1st and March 3rd, 1975, the skulls and jawbones of Healy, Rancourt, Parks, and Ball were found on Taylor Mountain, just east of Issaquah. Years later, Bundy claimed that he'd also dumped Donna Manson's body there, but no trace would ever be found of her. That always creeps me out when they have those remains that never get found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's bad enough when you catch the guy and he's just like, it was a long night.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff happening. Sorry.
It's dark out.
Dark out, yeah.
Well, you never know. The animals out there.
That's true. That's totally true. And that's, I think that a lot of damage. Go like when we did the West Memphis 3, mm-hmm. they were just in water basically. Mm-hmm. But so much of that sequence was just destroyed by natural elements.
Right.
Flies, turtles, fucking turtles. Sorry. I won't go that way. Now let's talk a little bit about his crimes in Utah and Colorado.
Hey.
Smoke it up, light it up,
oh,
inhale, exhale. Bundy smiles for the cameras and pleads not guilty during a press conference, announcing his indictment on first-degree murder charges. That autumn, Bundy began attending the University of Utah Law School in Salt Lake City, where he resumed killing in October. So he took a little break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's like,
a little vacay.
You know, I'm getting a little tennis elbow from the bashing. Bad joke, sorry. But anyway, Nancy Wilcox disappeared from Holiday, Utah on October 2nd, 1974. Wilcox was last seen riding in a Volkswagen Beetle. On October 18th, 1974, Bundy murdered Melissa Smith, the 17-year-old daughter of Midvale Police Chief Lois Smith. So he doesn't really have... It's not even a matter of, like, the best victim. It's like, who... It's definitely a thing of like who has the characteristics physically, mm-hmm. I think. Bundy raped, sodomized, and strangled her. Her body was found 9 days later. Next was Laura Amy, also 17, who disappeared when she left a Halloween party in Lea, Utah on October 31st, 1974. Her naked, beaten, and strangled corpse was found nearly a month later by hikers on Thanksgiving Day on the banks of a river in American Fork Canyon. In Murray, Utah, on November 8th, 1974, Carol DeRanche narrowly escaped with her life. This is an interesting story. So claiming to be this is where he finally was like, fuck, all right, I got a character idea. Mm-hmm. I'm going to roll with it. And scene. Hi, Carol. My name's Officer Rosalind. Which is the name that he went with, and said he was of the Murray Police Department. Bundy approached her at the Fashion Place Mall, told her someone had tried to break into her car, and asked her to accompany her to the police station. Look, there is no problem, especially if somebody comes up to you and says they're a police officer, if you ask them for their badge.
Mm-hmm.
You have every mm-hmm. right to do that.
Yep.
And if, like, I'm just saying, just... Especially if you look at him, maybe he's handsome, but then his eyeballs are like spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe take a second.
Yeah.
One of the other things I've heard too, if you do not trust whom is pulling you over or anything else, you can always call 911 and mm-hmm. ask that if they're the person that is supposedly pulling you over is a cop. There are people that will dress it up and all mm-hmm. that. So.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened here. Now, they drove for a short period before Bundy suddenly pulled to the shoulder and attempted to slap a pair of handcuffs on her. In the struggle, he fastened both loops to the same wrist.
I thought like somebody got himself handcuffed.
No, no.
On the steering wheel.
Oh boy, no. This is real comical. this is a humdinger right here. Anyway,
come on, Ted, get it together.
In the struggle, he felt, like you said, both loose to the same wrist. Bundy whipped out his crowbar, but DeRanche caught it in the air just before. She was like that Matrix moment. Like, he stops the bullet, like, you will not rape.
God.
Which is great. I'm super proud. I mean, happy that because before it caught in the air before it would have cracked her skull, she then got the door open and tumbled onto the highway, thus escaping the would-be killer.
Nice.
So that's two people that we brought up. And a lot of serial killers, there aren't these positive moments where people get away, mm-hmm. but this is the other one.
Finally, a win for the good guy.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. About an hour later, a strange man showed up at Viewmont High School in Bountiful, Utah, where the drama club was putting on a play. He approached the drama teacher and then a student, asking both to come out to the parking lot to identify a car. Both declined. The drama teacher saw him again shortly before the end of the play, this time breathing hard with his hair mussed and his shirt untucked. Another student saw the man lurking in the rear of the auditorium. Debbie Kent, a 17-year-old Viewmont High School student, left the play at intermission to go and pick up her brother and was never seen again. Later, investigators found a small key in the parking lot outside Viewmont High. It unlocked the handcuffs taken off Carol DeRanche. So, In 1975, while she was attending law school at the University of Utah, Bundy shifted his crimes to Colorado. On January 12th, 1975, Karen Campbell disappeared from the Wildwood Inn at Snowmass, Colorado, where she'd been vacationing with her fiancé and his children. She vanished somewhere in the span of 50 feet between the elevator doors and her room. Her body was found on February 17th, 1975.
Wow.
Next was Valley ski instructor Julie Cunningham. She disappeared on March 15th, 1975, and Denise Oliverson in Grand Junction on April 6th, 1975. So he's like, he doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what, maybe 2 weeks of a cool off period.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like,
and it's in his prime.
Yeah. And these aren't like victims that he killed and then that was it. He would mm-hmm. use them until they basically became.
Rigor mortis was setting
in. Yeah, basically, like the amount of time he could use them for whatever disgusting purposes he wanted to use them for. Now, while in prison, Bundy confessed to Colorado investigators that he used crutches to approach Cunningham after asking her to help him carry some ski boots to his car. At the car, Bundy clubbed her with his crowbar and immobilized her with handcuffs. Later... What's he doing with pots and pans, huh? Later, strangling her in a crime highly familiar to the Hawkins murder. Lynette Culver went missing in Pocatello, Idaho on May 6, 1975 from the grounds for junior high school. After his return to Utah, Susan Curtis vanished on June 28, 1975. Bundy confessed to the Curtis murder minutes before his execution.
Oh.
The bodies of Cunningham, Curtis, Culver and Oliverson have never been recovered.
I didn't know he was taking out kids too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like you said, when he was 14, there's that theory that he killed an 8-year-old.
Right. But I mean, like he's an adult now and he's taking out kids.
Oh
like,
yeah.
And I didn't know about that.
His brain was locked into this time. Jesus. So they used computers to cross-check different likely lists of suspects, classmates of Linda Healy, owners of Volkswagens, etc., against each other, and then identify suspects who turned up on more than one list. Theodore Robert Bundy was one of 25 people who turned up on four separate lists, and his case file was second on the to be investigated pile when the call came from Utah of an arrest. Now, this arrest, this first trial, and these escapes, we're going to kind of break down real quick, and then we might take a break. Oh, we got it. It's not too bad. Okay, so Bundy was arrested on August 16th, 1975 in Salt Lake City for failure to stop for a police officer, which is like, come on, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You're this proficient as a serial killer and you can't just fucking stop, obey the law. Fucking goofy.
Why start now?
Right.
Yeah, right.
So a search of his car revealed a ski mask, a crowbar, handcuffs, trash bags, an ice pick, and other items that were...
I see nothing suspicious here.
So, doing some gardening? What did you can do? So anyway, thought by the police to be burglary tools. Bundy remained calm during questioning, explaining that he needed the mask for skiing and had found the handcuffs in a dumpster. Yeah, these handcuffs are for...
These are dumpster cuffs.
Yeah.
It's for sexy time. Oh, wait.
This ice pick is for my ice... carving.
I'd like my water cold.
This is for my ice picking, officer.
Sometimes my door locks itself and I have to get in somehow.
So Utah Detective Jerry Thompson connected Bundy and his Volkswagen to the Durant kidnapping and the missing girls and searched his apartment. Uh-uh. The search uncovered a brochure of Colorado ski resorts with a check mark by the Wildwood Inn where Karen Campbell had disappeared. After searching his apartment, the police brought Bundy in for a lineup before Durant and the bountiful witnesses. They identified him as Officer Roseland and as the man lurking about the night Debbie Kent disappeared.
Mm.
That was the high school. Following a week-long trial, Bundy was convicted of Durant kidnapping on March 1st, 1976 and was sentenced to 15 years in Utah State Prison. Colorado authorities were pursuing murder charges, however, and Bundy was extradited there to stand trial.
What's your...
Seems awfully low. 15 years? That's it?
Well, it was kidnapping.
Murder. Oh, there was no murder.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they extradited him. So on June 7th, 1977, in preparation for a hearing in the Karen Campbell murder trial, Bundy was taken to the Pitkin County Courthouse in Aspen. During a court recess, he was allowed to visit the courthouse's law library because he was going to represent himself. So he needed to look at law books. And in order for him to do that and read the books, they would take the handcuffs off of him. So where this is where he jumped out of the building from a second story window and escaped, but sprained his right ankle during the jump. In minutes following the escape, Bundy at first ran and then strolled casually through the small town toward Aspen Mountain. He made it all the way to the top of Aspen Mountain without being detected, where he rested for 2 days in an abandoned hunting cabin.
Wow.
Which is just like, it's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's just creepy to think about him just sitting there like his eyeballs like spinning in circles. There's like fucking demon forest creatures that are like, fuck that house. And then they just keep walking. Like, we're not even going to possess that, man. Nope. It's not even worth it. Guy's a piece of shit. So on June 13, 1977, Bundy stole a car he found on the mountain. He drove back into Aspen and could have gotten away, but two police deputies noticed the Cadillac. So he drives back into the town.
Idiot.
This guy's not firing. He's kind of going loosey-goosey here.
Wow.
It's like, shit, I got to fuck. Is there a Walmart here? What decade am I in? Anyway, police noticed the Cadillac with dimmed headlights weaving in and out of its lane and pulled Bundy over. Also, I should mention, by the way, almost every single time he performed any of these crimes, he was like close to blackout drunk. So it was kind of a way to like lubricate the senses and get himself to push himself to do the thing that he desired deeply in himself to do. So while he was back in custody, Bundy worked on a new escape plan. He was being held in the Glenwood Springs, Colorado jail, where he awaited trial. He had acquired a hacksaw blade and $500 in cash because as soon as he became kidnapped, there were people still people who were like, he's innocent. He's the nicest guy. He saved people's lives. Women had crushes on him and he was boinking chicks on the side too. Like, I think there were the ones he was like, I want to bash her head in. Not going to do it because she might send me some cash. So like, and that was one thing that they showed in the Zac Efron movie because that gave him an opportunity to show his abs. So anyway, he later claimed the blade came from another prison inmate, so he's making friends. Over 2 weeks, he sawed through the welds, fixing a small metal plate in the ceiling, and after whittling it down further, was able to fit through the hole. He actually starved himself and lost like 35 pounds so he could fit through. I mean, the guy's got it. He's committed. Mm-hmm. He's like, fuck this, I'm out.
He is good at escaping.
Yes, he is. He is. He's not good at staying escaped. Or playing down.
Well, that's
murders.
How you get better. You get caught again.
Yeah, practice, right?
Practice.
Try again.
Yeah.
I get it, Teddy. It's all right. How's hell? Anyway, so an informant in the prison told guards that he had heard Bundy moving around the ceiling during the nights before his escape, but the matter was not investigated. When Bundy's Aspen trial judge ruled on December 23rd, 1977, that the Karen Campbell murder trial would start on January 9th, 1978, and changed the venue to Colorado Springs, Bundy realized that he had to make an escape before he was transferred out of the Glenwood Springs jail. On the night of December 30th, 1977, Bundy dressed warmly, packed boots and files under his blanket to make it look like he was sleeping. He wriggled through the hole and up into the crawl space. Bundy crawled over to a spot directly above the jailer's linen closet, who was out with his girlfriend because they were on a date.
Aww.
The jailer and his wife were out for the evening, like I said. Dropped down into the jailer's apartment and walked out the door.
Wow.
Bundy was free. But he was on foot in the middle of a bitterly cold, snowy Colorado night. He stole a broken down MG, but it stalled out in the mountains. Bundy was stuck on the side of Interstate 70 in the middle of the night in a blizzard, but another driver gave him a ride to Vail, which is Vail, Colorado. From there, he caught a bus to Denver and boarded the TWA 8:55 a.m. flight to Chicago. Because he went there to see his alma mater play Michigan State. He was like, fuck it, you know?
Why not?
Gotta catch a game.
Gonna catch a football game. Drink some beers.
Phone finger on.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm number one. So is my team. The Glenwood Springs jail guards did not notice Bundy was gone until noon on December 31st, 1977. Jeez. 17 hours after his escape, by which time Bundy was already in Chicago.
Wow.
Okay, I've got two big things left. Do you want to take a break? This is his, I hate to say this, but this is kind of Bundy's Zeppelin 4. His like insane moment, the part where he becomes a kind of not to certain serial killer aficionados. This is where he becomes a legend.
Okay.
Because he goes on what would be considered like one of the most insane murder sprees.
Yeah, let's go take a break.
All right, we'll take a break and then we'll get real.
Agree upon one, Margaret Bowman, guilty as charged. So say we all, Rudolph V. Tremel Foreman.
Ted Bundy sat there calmly, silently, as the guilty verdict was read. The jury had taken 6 hours to decide that the former law student was guilty of the strangulation murders of two Florida co-eds and guilty of the attempted murder of three other young women. Minutes before the verdict was returned, Bundy told ABC News in a telephone interview that he was prepared for the worst.
Ted, are you prepared for a guilty verdict?
Yes, I think so. It's never happened to me like quite this way before. I've never been convicted of murder before, and I hope and pray I won't be. But if it happens, then I just have to work with it.
Afterwards, Bundy's mother said she would continue to stand by her son's side.
It's wrong. We'll appeal it. It's just... What else can I say? The family will be devastated by this, but we stick behind him because we know he's not guilty, as do all his friends.
But the lawyer who handled Bundy's defense until the final days of the trial said he thought Bundy himself lost the case.
He was guilty of poor judgment. He was guilty of allowing his emotional inclinations to override an effective defense in his case.
The jury will now return on Saturday to make their recommendation as to whether Ted Bundy should be sent to the electric chair. Rebecca Chase, ABC News, Miami.
A judge in Miami today followed the jury's recommendation and sentenced Theodore Bundy to die in the electric chair for the murder of two co-eds. Bundy is the 136th person under death sentence in Florida. Ed Rabel reports.
Before pronouncing the sentence, Judge Edward Cowart let Bundy make a statement.
I'm not asking for mercy. For I find it somewhat absurd to ask for mercy for something I did not do. So I will be tortured for and will suffer for and receive the pain for that act. But I will not share the burden for the guilt.
In imposing sentence, Judge Cowart cited the savagery of the crimes and what he called the indifference of the defendant.
This court, independent of, but in agreement with, the advisory sentence rendered by the jury does hereby impose the death penalty upon the defendant Theodore Robert Bundy.
Then, in an unexpected move, perhaps an afterthought, Cowart stunned the courtroom with some parting words for Bundy.
Take care of yourself, young man.
Thank you.
I say that to you sincerely. Take care of yourself. It's a tragedy for this court to see it's such a total waste, I think, of humanity that I've experienced in this court. You're a bright young man. You made a good lawyer. I'd love to have you practice in front of me, but you went another way, partner.
Bundy says he'll appeal. Meanwhile, he has been ordered to the state prison to await setting of the date of his execution in the electric chair. Ed Rabel, CBS News, Miami.
Mr. Bundy went to Chicago. And then, following his arrival in Chicago, Bundy then caught an Amtrak train to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he got a room at the YMCA. On January 2nd, 1978, he went to an Ann Arbor bar and watched the University of Washington Huskies, the team of his alma mater, beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. He later stole a car in Ann Arbor, which he abandoned in Atlanta, Georgia, before boarding a bus for Tallahassee, Florida, where he arrived On January 8th, 1978, there he rented a room at a boarding house under the alias of Chris Hagen. So, getting a little better with
that. Finally figured out not to go by Ted Bundy as right. his alias.
Fred Gundy.
Yes, that's my name, Fred Gundy. I've come for honest work, I have. And that was his idea. Mm-hmm. He wanted to go to Florida to like really start over again. Get a job. Go the straight and narrow. And that's what happened. Time he lived out his life. He actually became a Republican like nominee for something. No. He did commit numerous petty crimes, including shoplifting, purse snatching, and auto theft. He stole a student ID card that belonged to Kenneth Meisner and sent away for copies of Meisner's social security card and birth certificates. So he's pretty smart with that stuff, because even me, I'm like, birth certificate? Where is that at? Is there a birth certificate store? He grew a mustache and drew a fake mole on his right cheek when he went out. And aside from that, he made no real attempt at disguise. Bundy tried to find work at a construction site, but when the personnel officer asked Bundy for his driver's license for identification, Bundy walked away. This was his only attempt at job hunting. So again, he sounds like kind of an entitled prick. 1 week after Bundy's arrival in Tallahassee in the early hours of Super Bowl Sunday on January 15th, 1978, 2.5 years of repressed homicidal violence erupted. This, like I said, this is when...
Oh, I'm feeling it.
Bundy entered the Florida State University Chi Omega sorority house at approximately 3 a.m., killed two sleeping women, Lisa Levy and Margaret Bowman. Bundy bludgeoned and strangled Levy and Bowman. He also sexually assaulted Levy. He also bludgeoned two other Chi Omegas, Karen Chandler and Kathy Kleiner. The entire episode. This is crazy. Now, I understand girls getting drunk, maybe some people blacking out.
You understand that, do you?
I'm just saying, I understand a good party and a party house, but the fact that he went through this house and just was slaughtering them.
Right. Like this is straight out of a movie.
This is like just Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
So the entire episode took no more than half an hour.
How many victims?
Four. After leaving the Chi Omega house, Bundy broke into another home. So he was having a bad... He was like, I'm repressed. I got a lot to get off my plate.
This sounds like his
Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
Stabby Bowl.
He broke into another home a few blocks away, clubbing and severely injuring Florida State University student Cheryl Thomas. On February 9th, 1978, Bundy traveled to Lake City, Florida. While there, he abducted, raped, and murdered 12-year-old Kimberly Leach,
Jesus.
Throwing her body under a small pig shed. On February 12th, 1978, Bundy stole yet another Volkswagen Beetle. I think that's his thing. Mm-hmm. And left Tallahassee for good, heading west across the Florida Panhandle. On February 15th, 1978, shortly after 1 a.m., Bundy was stopped by Pensacola police officer David Lee. When the officer called in a check on the license plate, the vehicle came up as stolen. Bundy then scuffled with the police officer before he was finally subdued. As Lee took the unknown suspect to jail, Bundy said, I wish you'd killed me.
Mm.
At his booking, Bundy gave the police the name Ken Meisner and presented stolen identification for Meisner, but the Florida Department of Law Enforcement made a positive fingerprint identification early the next day. He was immediately transported to Tallahassee and subsequently charged with the Tallahassee and Lake City murders. He was later taken to Miami to stand trial for the Chi Omega murders. So, during the conviction, as we heard the conviction that he got, but during the... leading to the execution, bite mark testimony at the Chi Omega trial. Bundy went to trial for the Chi Omega murders in June 1979. So they found positive identity because he'd actually gnawed some girl's nipple almost completely off. With Dade County Circuit Court Judge Edward Cowart presiding, despite having five court-appointed lawyers, he insisted on acting his own attorneys. Again, it's his ego. And even cross-examined witnesses, including the police officer who had discovered Margaret Bowman's body. He was prosecuted by Assistant State Attorney Larry Simpson. Two pieces of evidence proved crucial. First, Chi Omega member Nita Neary getting back to the house very late after a date, saw Bundy as he left and identified him in court. She actually saw the bludgeoning object too. Second, during his homicidal frenzy, Bundy bit Lisa Levy in her left buttock, leaving obvious bite marks. Police took plaster casts of Bundy's teeth and a forensics expert matched them to the photographs of Levy's wound. Bundy was convicted on all counts and sentenced to death. After confirming the sentence, Cowart gave him the verdict. It is ordered that you be put to death by a current of electricity that be passed through you until you are dead. Take care of yourself, young man. I say that to you sincerely. Take care of yourself, please. It's an utter tragedy for this court to see such a total waste of humanity, as you heard in the audio clip.
I hate for him to get sick and die before he's put to death, I guess.
You would have made a good lawyer, and I would have loved to have you in practice for me, but you went another way. Take care of yourself. I don't feel any animosity towards you. I want you to know that. Once again, take care of yourself, which sounds kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been like, you're a piece of shit. You deserve this. Mm-hmm. And rotten hell. There, I wrote it for you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Cowart. So Bundy was tried for the Kimberly Leach murder in 1980. He was again convicted on all counts, principally due to fibers found in his van that matched Leach's clothing and an eyewitness that saw him leading Leach away from the school and sentenced to death. During the Kimberly Leach trial, Bundy married former co-worker Carol Ann Boone in the courtroom while questioning her on the stand. And because of some weird Florida law, by asking somebody to marry him on stand and her saying yes, they were legally married.
Huh. That's beautiful, man. Mm-hmm.
Following numerous conjugal visits between Bundy and his new wife, Boone gave birth to a daughter in October of 1982. So somewhere out there, there's a Bundy daughter. She changed her name.
Yikes. I would imagine, yeah, right? So.
However, in 1986, Boone moved back to Washington and never returned to Florida. Her whereabouts and those of Bundy's daughter are unknown.
Hmm.
While awaiting execution in Stark Prison, Bundy was housed in the cell next to former fellow serial killer Otis Toole, who we will see down the line as part of Henry Lee Lucas's murdering sprees. Otis Toole was the big homosexual.
Otis or Otis?
Otis. Sorry, Otis. Otis. Never stops on this show. Otis.
It was such an odd way to pronounce his name.
I keep saying odd. Otis Toole was the supposed murderer of Adam Walsh, FBI profiler Robert K. Kess. Adam Walsh was Walsh's. What is the guy's name? Oh my God, people are screaming right now. Unsolved. No, not. Not Unsolved Mysteries. What's that? America's Most Wanted. Oh, thank you, Bell. America's Most Wanted. He was the guy that was looking for answers to his son's murder, and Otis Toole said that he was the one that did it. But Robert K. Ressler met with him there as part of his work interviewing serial killers, but found Bundy uncooperative and manipulative, willing to speak only in the third person and only in hypothetical terms. Writing in 1992, Ressler spoke of his impression of Bundy in comparison to his reviews of other serial killers. Quote, "This guy was an animal, and it amazed me that the media seemed unable to understand that." Unquote. Mm. However, during the same period, Bundy was often visited by Special Agent William Hagmeyer of the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Behavioral Sciences Unit. Bundy would come to confide in Hagmeyer, going so far as to call him his best friend. Eventually, Bundy confessed to Hagmeyer many details in the murders that had went unknown or unconfirmed. In October of 1984, Bundy contacted former King County homicide detective Bob Keppel and offered to assist in the ongoing search for the Green River Killer, which this may sound familiar to you because this is a similar thing that was kind of examined in the movie Silence of the Lambs, using one serial killer to find motives in another.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
By providing his own insight analysis, Keppel and Green River Task Force Detective David Reichert traveled to Florida's death row to interview Bundy. Both detectives later stated that these interviews were of actual little help in the investigation. They provided far insight into Bundy's own mind, however, and were primarily pursued in the hope of learning the details of unsolved murders which Bundy was suspected of committing. Bundy mugshot 1980, the day after he was sentenced to death for the murder of Kimberly Leach Bundy, contacted Keppel. Bundy contacted Keppel again in 1988. At that point, his appeals were exhausted. Bundy had beaten previous death warrants for for March 4th, 1986, and July 2nd, 1986, and November 18th, 1986. And these were close. Like, he was about to die, and then, like, 15 minutes before, they're like, appeal, 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 we'll do this, this, and another thing. Like, I'll help you guys find more dead bodies. Like, he was doing everything he could to get off it. With execution imminent, Bundy confessed to 8 official unsolved murderers in Washington State for which he was the prime suspect. Mm. Bundy told Keppel that there were actually 5 bodies left on Taylor Mountain, not 4 as they had originally thought. Bundy confessed in detail to the murder of Georgiana Hawkins, describing how he lured her to his car, clubbed her with a tire iron that he had stashed on the ground under his car, drove away with her in the car with him, and later raped and strangled her. After the interview, Keppel reported that he had been shocked in speaking with Bundy and that he was the kind of man who was born to kill. Keppel stated, he described the Issaquah crime scene where Janice Ott, Denise Naslund, and Georgiana Hawkins had been left, and it was almost like he was just there. Like he was seeing everything. He was infatuated with the idea because he had spent so much time there. He is just totally consumed with murder all the time. That's what Keppel said. Bundy had hoped that he could use the revelations and partial confessions to get another stay of execution or possibly commute a sentence to life imprisonment. At one point, a legal advocate working for Bundy asked many of the families of the victims to fax letters to Florida Governor Robert Martinez and asked for mercy for Bundy in order to find out if the remains of their loved ones were. All of the families refused. Keppel and others reported that Bundy gave scant details about the crimes during his confessions and promised to reveal more and other body dump sites if he were given more time. The ploy failed and Bundy was executed on schedule. The night before Bundy was executed, he gave a television interview with Dr. James Dobson, head of the evangelical Christian organization focused on the family. During the interview, Bundy made repeated claims of the pornographic roots of his crime. He stated that while pornography did not cause him to commit the murder, the consumption of violent pornography helped shape and mold his violence into, quote, behavior too terrible to describe. He alleged that he felt the violence in the media, particularly sexualized violence, sent boys down the road to becoming Ted Bundy's. In the same interview, Bundy stated, "You're going to kill me, and that will protect society from me. But out there, there are many, many more people who are addicted to pornography, and you are doing nothing about that." According to Hagmeier, Bundy contemplated suicide in the days leading up to his execution, but eventually decided against it. At 7:06 a.m. local time on January 24th, 1989, Ted Bundy was executed in an electric chair at Florida State Prison in Stark, Florida. His last words were, quote, "I'd like you to give my love to my family and friends," unquote. Then more than 2,000 volts were applied across his body for less than 2 minutes. He was pronounced dead at 7:16 a.m. Several hundred people were gathered outside the prison and cheered when they saw the signal that Bundy had been declared dead.
Woof.
Indeed. So, yeah, there's that. And that's fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're a conspiracy show, which means I have to bring up one interesting conspiracy about this whole thing. And that was, did the Republican Party replace George W. Bush with Ted Bundy?
What?
So, this is according to Insern Jenkins. And there is a pretty interesting photo that I can post on our Instagram, which you should be following. Duh.
Duh.
Now here's the breakdown of the sinister plot. Let's go back to 1989. Newly elected President George H.W. Bush has one downfall, and that is his oldest son, George W. Bush, who by that time had solidly established himself as a drunk without any intellectual capacity, who had failed at every business he'd ever tried. That is a tough nut to swallow for a former oil exec turns head of the CIA, but why Ted Bundy? From the pic that we will post, you can tell there is a striking resemblance between Ted Bundy and the future president. What do you think, Josh?
It looks like they could be brothers.
The basic gist is that in 1989, Bundy was willing to do almost anything, including dropping hints to more victims to keep from being executed. He had been an up-and-comer in the Republican Party in the early 70s and spent his 20s working on political campaigns, just like Bush had. But unlike Bush, Bundy was incredibly smart and charming. But could George H.W., Bush and his lovely bride Barbara really give the go-ahead to replace their failure of a family legacy with a known sociopathic serial killer, while the firstborn was executed in a Florida electric chair. Just to promote the Republican Party and further along their legacy and family name, past that of their bumbling oldest child? Think what you might, but there is one piece of glaring evidence to shut down this conspiracy theory, and that is that Ted Bundy is way too smart to have committed the multitude of blunders that George H.W. Bush is famously known for committing while in office. Interesting, Mr. Jenkins. Well,
Donald Rumsfeld.
Yes.
That has been Ted Bundy. And unfortunately, because like I said, this was a longer episode and it's a fan vote, we have to instead by go the Yahoo Answers you know and love in the other segment, pop culture, which I kind of mentioned the movie. There's also the confession tapes on Netflix. Netflix has got a Bundy boner, so there's some Bundy stuff there.
Netflix really just has like a serial killer boner.
It kind of does. We're going to have to get into a verdict. One corner for podcasters you know and love and trust. We won't let you down, girl or boy or man or wool man, Otis or Otis
or goose.
True, we love gooses.
Geeses.
And the other corner is Ted Bundy. And verdict, we're going to take this literally. What verdict would you give Bundy? And also, I want you to consider, would you, as a prosecutor or some sort of law enforcement, would you want to keep him around to try to find more bodies? Or do you think what they did was the right thing to do?
Good poll. You want to go first,
Larry? I'm good at this. I've been doing it for a minute.
I guess I'll go. Well, yeah, obviously he was guilty. That's clear.
Are we the judge or the jury?
Yeah. What are we doing?
You're the judge.
Okay.
You have the option to give him any verdict, any judgment you want, but consider the fact that, yes, he could potentially find more bodies.
Okay.
I would have given him life, because I feel like for someone like him, the death penalty was, I mean, like he had said to that cop in Florida, I wish you would have just killed me. Like, when he knows that seems kind of like the easy way out. Like, I would much rather him suffer for the rest of his life in jail. Whether or not he gives up more locations of bodies, I don't know if he would have. But if he was working with police already and sort of helped in that, maybe they could have found more. I guess my thing is he's going to die either way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like the idea of him rotting in a prison cell versus, you know, humane euthanization.
Maybe we could have studied him more and kind of gotten the idea. Mm-hmm. Larry, what do you think?
I mean, isn't this like if this isn't the guy you give the death penalty to, then who do you give the death penalty to?
True.
And those lines are so long there. I don't think they put in an express lane yet.
Ted Bundy, we put in a fast lane to the
12 murders or less. So that gives you time to pick his brain as well. While he's on death row.
True. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's a quick thing, because it wasn't until 89.
Yeah.
In like 79. So, Josh, what do you say?
It's hard because both April and Larry make very good points, but
of course we do.
That's literally what we're here for.
Have you met them?
Because the problem is, yes, we could try to keep him around to identify more bodies and whatnot, but he clearly, they tried to get him to help with those other murders and he didn't prove to do anything. But he did also admit to some of those other murders he did. So I feel like somebody like him, like to euthanize him, like all, you know, humanely, it's an easy way out versus throwing him in solitary confinement with no ways of killing himself.
We'll just let Josh euthanize him.
I thought that was a piggy.
It sounds like a piggy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just... Give him bread and water, the very basics of survival.
It's a slide whistle player fart.
I think if he was in solitary for long enough, his mental health was already at a pretty steep decline that they could have cracked him.
Well, the fact that he, you said that when he was always escaping, he was always drunk. It's like
not then. During the crimes, he was.
Oh, even better. During the crimes, he was drunk. So obviously, he wasn't insane. He was conscious of what he was doing and knew it was wrong. Yep, that's why he would get drunk.
That's a good point.
So this bastard needs to suffer.
And I'm going to agree with Larry and Josh on this one. That's why the families refused to keep him around, because that would have been the main appeal. They would have had that ability to say, hey, like, we want you to find this guy. He's a figment of his own imagination. There was nothing real about Ted Bundy whatsoever. The only real thing he ever did was kill people. And for him, that was his way of life. I don't think you're going to find more things, because if it didn't play into his orchestrated image that he had, he didn't want to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. It's like the perfect example of Ted Bundy was just that engagement with that girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When the game was done, and or it wasn't, there wasn't a new height to take with it, when it wasn't risky enough for him and no reward, fuck it. He didn't want anything to do with it. He was one of the worst, and he rots in hell to this day.
Out of curiosity, do we know what she had that look, that brown hair parted down the middle?
Yes, brown hair parted down the middle.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't kill her.
Well, he was in jail. How could he?
No, I get what you're saying. No, he wasn't.
Oh,
I get what he's saying. He's saying, why didn't he kill
the girl that he originally was engaged to?
Oh, because he got married. I got confused there.
Yeah.
I think it was just his lost time. Like, he didn't conquer this thing quick. It was like, and then afterwards he could just be like, you know, I'm the boss.
Mm-hmm.
I do what I want. I you know,
maybe he was smart enough to know that the parents would, or her father would come after him. No, it was him.
Or he actually had feelings for her.
Yeah, it could be too.
Possible, yeah.
It's creepy. Mm-hmm. Creepy guy. Anyway, that's been your verdict. All right. Well, since it's a fan vote, we get to answer some questions. And when we answer those questions, it means it's time for Larry to do his segment where he opens up the mail sack.
Mail sack.
Now, if you're curious, every month when we do a fan vote episode, initially we drop on our closed Facebook group, which you should join, we post a link for you to join and comment about any question. Nothing's off limits. I mean, I don't know. I guess I could probably think of something off limits, but for the most part...
Don't ask for a credit card number or social security.
We're not going that route.
Yeah.
Addresses, things like that. But anyway, so Larry, what did people have to say this month in the mail sack?
Well, we'll start with Xander Kinsey, who asks, what is everyone's dream job? I'm a ranch foreman, as in horses, not sauce, and loving every minute of it. Dream job.
I would love to do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. At this point, yeah.
If there was a way, we do have an incredible Patreon support system, and we're able to do this without any... We're making money, technically. Mm-hmm. So I would love to one day get to the point where I could do this daily.
Yeah. You know,
do an hour or two.
I personally would like to be a blowjob judge. That's my dream job.
So you just rate the blowjobs you're being given, or
yes?
Oh, I was gonna say, did you like to watch?
How else are you gonna judge it?
Oh, understood. So if I'm saying, do you have to have like a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead, and
blindfold?
Yeah,
blind test.
Yeah. Right.
You don't want to, you know, skew the results.
Does the fiery redhead provide the more?
Well, you won't know because that's how we. You know, scientific. Okay. It would be scientific, right. Yes. Of course.
It's for science.
Right. It's for, yes. You know.
Of course.
Love it. April, you got a dream job?
I would love to teach a cooking class.
Oh, cool.
Like a culinary instructor.
We've had a few people really mention that you should put out a cookbook.
Oh, it's coming.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know. Is it? Should it be? I guess.
Hey, if you want to do it, Amazon publishes books for basically cost, I think, and you can definitely do something. Mm-hmm.
or an ebook.
Yeah.
The Dutch Mom's Guide to Townhouse Cooking.
That's right.
101 Ways to Use Ranch.
Oh, God.
Recipes from the Shoop Kitchen Studio.
They're all casseroles.
They are. Hope you have a lot of cream of chicken soup on hand.
Question number two is from Marie Garza.
Wait, what was yours was the same as mine?
Podcasting?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, you both said that. Marie Garza asks, what would be the number one item you save from your house if it was on fire? Pets and humans not included.
Oh, I was going to say.
I'll go. I would say what I actually just got today, because it's a family heirloom, a guitar that was made in the, was it 1964?
1964, yep.
Yeah, it's a family heirloom. It's a handmade Gibson acoustic. It's beautiful.
I mean, I feel like I can go with the typical response, say, oh, I got to grab my phone because I got to call everybody. But I mean, I think they're
more likely is going to be on you.
Yeah. If you're saying like a tangible object, then probably my guitar as well. Like Josh said, it's just it's an output device and something I use. It's a tool I kind of need.
I mean, I think it has to be the computer and hard drives that all this stuff is on. Because if I didn't, you guys would beat the shit out of me.
The only reason why I didn't pick like my PlayStation is we have insurance, so that stuff is the saves go in the cloud and everything else. So, wouldn't have to worry about that.
I would do. We have a couple of small totes of like family photos. I would take those because like the ones that are on my phone or on our computer or whatever, we can download those are already
they're in a cloud somewhere.
Yep.
Janessa Frosch?
Yes. Sure.
Favorite holiday traditions?
Setting up the Christmas tree. I don't like Christmas, but I love setting up the Christmas tree because we always put on music and eat like hand foods. Like
We do finger tornadoes and stuff. While we decorate the Christmas. That was actually going to be my answer, too. That was something that I always did. Mm-hmm. And you did that, too, when you were little, right? So it kind of worked in both of our favor. But yeah, we raid like the frozen food section and grab like mozzarella sticks and just have the whole table full of like little plates and bowls. So like you can go between like decorating the tree and like eat some food and then go back in there. It's really fun.
I have to kind of piggyback on that. I mean, my gut, like my favorite thing ever is a nice lazy Sunday now because it's like the one day I don't have to have like a million things going on other than usually the podcast at the end of the night. But that doesn't, if I have my ducks in a row, then I have that already set aside and I know what I'm doing. But I do too love to like decorating the tree and like making treats or cookies and things like that. Drinking eggnog.
I think it's making and giving a plate of food to Chewy at Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
I'm excited for... Please for take this a video this
we
year.
We always do every year. I'll post it actually on the Facebook group this year.
Yes, awesome. Please do.
And have you guys ever thought about covering Ed Kemper?
Yes. Yeah.
And what's the best dad joke you've ever heard? I don't like dad jokes, so say none.
Oh, that's why you never laugh at mine. That's why.
I think...
Not a fan.
I think my personal favorite was a text that I got from Josh. They had come in and replaced the sliding closet doors on our laundry area. And it was really stupid. They just replaced them with doors that we already had that they took out and they just put them back in. But whatever.
Probably fixed the guides.
Yeah, I was at work and I texted Josh and said, he said, oh, yeah, they took care of everything. Everything's done. And I said, oh, cool. What do the doors look like? And he sent me a picture of the doors, like Jim Morrison. He was like, that's a really old picture, but that, I'm pretty sure that. And I was like,
I remember that now.
Larry just straight face.
That's my kind of humor.
Like, that's 80% of just how he
I would have looked at my phone and just chucked it into the highway.
for me, there's this game that's for PlayStation. I can't remember. What it's called off the top of my
head. Dad joke simulator?
No, it's one of the first PS4 games. I can't think of what it's called, but anyways, you fly a ship and you blow up these alien spacecraft in the city. At the end of the level, the whole level just blows up and then you fly away. Well, when you're flying away, the thing on your controller says Armageddon and you fly away. And I'm always like, yeah, Armageddon out of here.
He says that whenever we leave to go somewhere.
So his favorite dad joke is his own.
Yes.
Yes.
I think I do have my own dad joke moments, but like as a kid, the only thing my dads ever did to like joke around, it was always like, I mean, they were like walking jokes themselves half the time. My dad would come home, put on a robe and eat like mixed nuts out of a mug with a spoon and watch CNN. I'm just like, what are you doing?
I can appreciate it.
And then he's just sitting there, you know, half asleep, eating his mixed nuts. And then for me, like my stepdaddy would just be like, I just got out of work. Smell my feet. I'm like, gross. Yeah. Yeah. Like I've been walking around on these doggies all day. Come here, kid. I'm like, oh gross. So, yeah, that's Yikes. Pretty much that.
Debate of the decade, Apple or Android and why?
This is okay. Interesting.
I mean, for me, it's Apple. I like Logic, mm-hmm. which is why I bought an Apple computer.
Yep.
And from at that point, it's like, I mean, the way everything syncs up, I might as well just go all in with the Apple.
I'm with you. I'm Apple too. I use Logic for editing the demos I do. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten so used to it. I did like having an Android mm-hmm. and it was great. Like that. I love the Samsung Health apps mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. But
I have literally no allegiance. I have an Apple phone and I have an Apple iPad, but it doesn't matter to me. I can go either way.
Mm-hmm. I'm Apple for sure. I think it's just super user friendly. I mean, they both are really, but I'm just so used to Apple now that it would be weird for me mm-hmm. to go back to an Android. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like the way everything sort of works together.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to just be able to sync my stuff through the Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That Great. Makes sense.
Skylar Tibbs and her 9,000 questions.
Oh, I love you, Skylar.
Favorite holiday childhood memory?
When I got an N64.
Mm-hmm. Opening up Metal Gear Solid on Christmas morning.
My dad wrapped up his last cigarette and gave it to me for Christmas.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's
it was good. Very sweet. It made me cry. I was like 9.
Do I smoke it or
Dad, what do I do with this?
I think it's when Andy would come home from Chicago.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'd be my brother, Andy. Mm-hmm. For the listeners, what's the dumbest thing you ever believed?
I don't know.
I mean, we've brought up things that we've believed on mm-hmm. this show. God. So see former episodes. As far as like, yeah. I guess some people might say believing in aliens mm-hmm. is weird or believing in
right.
ghosts is weird, but those are things that I definitely mm-hmm. have some belief in. I would say, I don't know. This is kind of dumb thing that I believed in. Oh, so.
Oh boy.
I had this. As a kid, I didn't quite know how to say certain words correctly.
Really? You don't say.
As a kid?
And I remember there was another kid on the playground.
You never know.
We were sitting on a swing set, and I was like, my dad lives in a condom. And the kid was like, what? And I was like, he has a condom. Condominium? Like, he owns a condom. And they were like, You mean a condo? Like, it took me probably an...
We timeshare.
Yeah.
Timesharing.
I just
condo.
Remember distinctly mm-hmm. saying I thought a condo so much was a condom.
It's got a reservoir tip where we store all the goods.
Oh, I went, piggybacking off that, I went maybe 3 or 4 years thinking that libido was pronounced libido. And I was like... 8th, 9th grade. I read a lot of romance novels that summer. They throw that word around a lot.
Her libido was pulsing. Interesting.
Yeah.
You guys have anything?
I can't think of anything.
I sure I have. It's just nothing's coming to my mind right now.
Been on.
Let's see here. When I first got my license, this is Skylar. When I first got my license, I sincerely thought you could turn left on red, and I did it countless times when I would be on my way home. Oh. It wasn't until I had some friends riding with me and we were talking about the rules of road that I found out that just wasn't okay. Luckily, I never got caught. And when I was 13 or 14, I hated my nose because I thought it pointed up too much. So I believed I could fix it by just holding it down.
Nice.
Like I do with my boner. Satan needs you to design a circle of hell that is mildly annoying. Mm. What is the punishment and what kind of people go there?
Oh.
I would say, like, I mean, either, like, complete and total, like, internet trolls.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to, like, read out loud what they said mm-hmm. to, like, guardians, like parents or something. And then they would just be eviscerated mm-hmm. by people they loved. Just because those type of people, I hate them. And I like people who just go out of their way to like actually down just, on something that
I find if you ignore them, that's what they're looking for is a mm-hmm. response.
So true.
It's actually like the best revenge is just to ignore them.
But as we've grown as a show, we've had our own trolls.
Yes.
And
I laugh at them.
I know you do. But for me, it just pisses me off. And it's I love you
that's
guys.
That's what they want.
I know. I love you guys. So it's hard because I automatically want to defend you guys. And I've had no a few problem. Of those spats, but
agree with them if they mm-hmm. attack me.
Yeah, look, for now on, let's just do that. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. I do suck. The person that goes there, people who like snub their nose at people, like I'm better than you. In this zero or the circle of hell, they have a trapdoor booger that they just can't get out.
Oof,
trapdoor. That kind where like you keep blowing your nose because you're like, I know you're in there. Mm-hmm. And it's like so frustrating.
Yep.
And then when it finally comes out, it's like a fully formed Slimer from Ghostbusters. It's like, meh, 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 meh,
but in this case, it never comes out.
That sucks.
I'm torn between two circles. One, would be you're trying to sleep, but the battery is dead in your smoke alarm, you know, and it beeps every 2 minutes. And so you can't sleep because it keeps beeping, but mm-hmm. it can't stop. Or you're trying to watch like shitty 90s primetime TV and mm-hmm. there's like a line of pixels dead in the middle of your TV screen. And the people who go there are the people who don't tip their wait staff.
Ooh, I like it.
Always tip.
Mm-hmm.
Box of your favorite cereal. Only this much milk left in the jug every single time.
Like living in my house. Mm-hmm.
And the people that go there are the wait staff that give that when you go to McDonald's, they give you a large fry and one ketchup packet.
Oof. Oh,
yep. Mm,
no,
I was stingy like with my ketchup packets. No,
would you like some salt and ketchup? Sure. 17 salts and one ketchup packet. Yep.
God,
maybe they have pick a
Wyatt Adam asks favorite Thanksgiving food. Mine is always the gravy.
Just picture the guy like drinking gravy, yeah. Eating it like soup.
See, up here we like to make gravy popsicles. Suck on them. Sauce gravy.
I think we talked about this on one of our Patreon shows. Mine is hands down stuffing.
The Thanksgiving side dish.
Yep.
I'm going to go with my dad's mashed potatoes.
Those are delicious.
Sour cream.
Pumpkin pie. My mom makes a killer pumpkin pie.
She does.
Yeah, it's either the garlic mashed potatoes. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
How cold is it there? It was in the 30s today.
Yeah.
It's 41 right now.
It's in the 70s here in Vegas. Go fuck yourself, Wyatt. Not rubbing it in, but fuck the snow.
Put it all in black, buddy.
Tim Marburger.
Marburger.
What's the strangest thing you put ranch dressing on?
I put it on eggs once.
Really? Interesting.
Just to try something different.
Living on the edge.
I mean,
notice how I said once.
Yeah. Like breadsticks, pizza and breadsticks. That's pretty common here, though.
Pizza and breadsticks.
It's a Midwest thing. Yeah,
it's a super Midwesty thing.
I know a guy who puts it all on his pizza. Just dumps the ranch onto the pizza directly.
That's like a bullet train to
heart attackville.
Heart attack hotel. Weirdest thing I put ranch on is, I mean, is it just me or is there like ranch salt now at the movie theater?
Yeah,
there is.
You can get ranch popcorn seasoning.
That's gross.
Yeah, you know what? I put ranch on salads. That's about it.
You know what, though? Pro tip, that ranch popcorn seasoning, really good on steamed vegetables.
Okay. I can see that.
You can see that.
I guess the weirdest thing ever put ranch on, it would be... Well, I don't think it's weird if I put it on it, really.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. I don't see... I can't think of anything.
Interesting.
L. Pete asks, what's a band that everybody loves except you? For me, it's the Beatles.
Mm-mm.
Mm. For you?
No, for L. Pete, oh, for it's L. Pete. The Beatles.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I thought you liked them. Interesting. I already know Josh's.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's Phil Collins. Everybody loves him, and I don't.
Yeah. Hmm.
That's a
tough one.
Yeah, because I'm pretty open. I guess it would be like Garth Brooks, because I'm not a big country fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I know a lot of people who are like, I don't like a lot of country, but I love me some Brooks. Garth Brooks.
He's not horrible. I've heard worse.
Yeah.
Brooks and Dunn.
I don't. Probably anything metal.
Okay. Like the hard metal stuff. Like Metallica.
Slayer, near Metallica's. Yeah. And
he doesn't like all my that music. Stuff.
I don't know. It's just like it's trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Understood.
Yeah. Kiss, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't even. Is that even considered a band that everyone loves? Because.
No.
Knights in Satan's Service is a very big band.
They're very. Yeah, yes or no.
Yeah.
There's no. I dabble in Kiss.
Oh, and Rolling Stones. I hate the Rolling Stones.
I'm not a big fan of them. They have some songs, but yeah, I will attest I'm not a big fan of them either.
Who was the one that I was complaining to you about the other day? That I was at work a week ago and everyone's like, oh yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I'm like, no, fuck Stevie Ray Vaughan. He sucks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. I kind of like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
No, CCR. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. You don't like Clear Creedence?
I can't stand CCR.
I love them.
I love them too.
Like the lyrics, rising. Do they make some good points in their lyrics? Mm-hmm. It's pretty good lyric writing. Mm. LP continues, for the parents of the Pod family, everyone has a moment when their kid does or says something inappropriate but hysterical, or said something with total innocence and not understood what they said. Somehow you have to not laugh and tell them it's not okay to do. LP goes on and says, my daughter's had a few doozies. One time we were at the gas station and she was naming all the parts of the car. She explained to me that I had just stuck the nozzle in the car's gas hole.
Pretty good.
One time out at lunch, we were sitting next to a Japanese couple. Josie looked at them and half shouted, why are you all talking gibberish?
Oh, shit.
Why do I feel like Ryan would say that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that today, but maybe as a little tot. When I first started to run on the treadmill, I had an issue because when I would run past a certain amount of miles, your nipples start to hurt if you're wearing a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So I always would run with my shirt off. And I remember Cora walking in and being like, daddy, you're fat. And I was like,
why do you think I'm on this thing?
Yeah, right. Like, that was kind of the drive in the initial. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she was like, what, two?
Yeah.
Look what's in your future.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's not really a fun one.
Uh-huh. But it's inappropriate.
Listen, our son, our 10-year-old has Asperger's. So pretty much everything that comes out of his mouth is like inappropriate. There was one time that we had someone he had never met over for dinner. And the first thing that came out of his mouth was, I had surgery on my penis because it was crooked. Like, shit like that. We were standing in line behind a black couple, and he very loudly asked me, hey, why is that guy's hair so bumpy?
Yeah.
And then there was the time that we went to the gas station. There was a guy with really long hair, and he asked him, are you a girl? Because you look kind of like a girl. And we were like, oh, he's spectacular. There's no filter.
Speaks his mind.
Not a one.
Breaking down walls, connecting people. Oh, boy. Why is your hair so bumpy?
There was another time when we were, there was a couple speaking Spanish, and he asked them if they were aliens, which
was
a bit of a forehead slap.
Now, thankfully, nothing has ever happened from any of these situations. We quickly jump in and explain to him, like, no, this is... X reason why right. thing. And he has apologized to people. Mm. He didn't realize that he was offensive.
Yeah.
LP with another one. Can you think of a time you were mid-argument with someone, realized you were wrong, but had dug in so deep that you just had to keep going?
April and I do that weekly.
We don't argue that much.
Probably with
playfully
my,
argue.
Probably yeah. with my ex-wife, which was would have been one of those things where it's like, I'm really just fighting so I don't have to sleep on the road outside or.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you for those lucky enough to never be in a relationship where things become so volatile, it's easier to just walk away. Mm-hmm. Just if you're fighting with somebody and that you obviously they're a wall and you're not mm-hmm. going to mm-hmm. pierce that, just walk away.
Thanks, Humongous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's like because I'm always right. So.
Of course.
No, I
almost passed out. I rolled my eyes. So hard.
No, there's maybe been an occasion or two where I'm in the middle of arguing with Josh and I know that I, not necessarily that I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. I'm very aware that I'm being unreasonable. Mm-hmm. But now I'm so deep into being unreasonable that I continue being unreasonable and mm-hmm. then apologize for it later.
Mm-hmm. Once or twice?
Shut up.
I don't know. I guess when I'm wrong, I'm just like, well, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's good quality.
Yeah.
I think I've changed completely since that ended. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. now it's different. But during the time, it was always...
Because, I mean, part of life is just being wrong.
Right.
Right. No, I totally agree.
Matt McShitterman asked, this question is for Ryan. Any updates on your Oculus? I was thinking of getting one. I want to know if you still use it. And how has it held up?
It works great. I only use it maybe once or twice a week, if that. And the only thing I don't like about the Oculus is that it can be kind of disorienting if you have it on for a long time. Especially when you first take it off. I know, Josh, you just got one, too.
Right. And actually, I responded to him about that.
I'm going
to
keep this brief.
Because he... Well, go ahead. Read the follow-up. Because I had mentioned I had one as well. Larry. Huh?
Do you talk to him?
Well, I didn't. Because I said, we will probably answer that together. He has the Oculus Go, while right. I have the Oculus Quest. And he said... follow up. What are the differences? What can you do with each? As far as tech wise, I'm not entirely sure what the difference is in the hardware.
I think the Oculus Go, the one that I have, is more about watching TV and having like sports pass stuff. You can go and like sit front row at an NBA game or.
Sure. And the Quest also does that. Now, the Quest has 72 hertz. You can get a 64 or 128 gig hard drive on it. And if you don't mind me asking, how much, what size Go do you have and how much was that?
I have the lesser size and it was like 300.
Okay. Which is not too far away, but the Quest, you can get the 399 for the 64. And the 120 is $499.
It's fun. Buy one. The end.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're great.
You know, just don't hold put on. It. Don't, he was don't asking because he wants to get brief. One, and I'm just gonna. I just want to say that I'm yes, I've had brief. It, and it's awesome. April's been on it, and she's mm-hmm. enjoyed it as well. Yeah, there's really fun brief. Games.
I like your reviews.
The kids like them. Too.
I'm sorry. It's I awesome. Do this.
Get one.
I do this review shit on the side.
I'm gonna keep this brief.
Yeah. I'm used to it's, explaining shit.
So it's, you don't have to do it here. That's why you do it on the side.
Well, no one else is looking at me on Twitter.
I'm gonna keep this brief.
Okay, it's fun. Get one.
Why aren't you paying attention to me?
Matt, make sure my favorite brand of gummy bears. Mine is a tie between Black Forest and Haribo. Trolley can F off.
Mm.
You're wrong, sir. Because Trolley makes sour gummies,
mm-hmm.
and they're good.
They are very good. I love the sour gummies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one. Yeah, I enjoy sour gummies. Mm-hmm.
I don't like regular gummies.
I prefer worms to bears.
Mm.
I won't kick bears out of bed.
Yeah.
I like sour worms as
How
well.
How you doing?
Yeah, I would have to agree, though. Haribo is probably my favorite.
Haribo.
Haribo.
They're good.
Mm. I mean, they're all kind of the same, aren't they? It's just that's like corn syrup and gelatin.
I've had some, though, that like they're kind of gummy, mm-hmm. not necessarily.
They're all supposed to be.
Kind of the point.
Well, I mean, I guess I meant like hard.
Yeah.
Like not fun.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Soak them in vodka and they're all good.
There you go. You won't care.
Mm-hmm.
Skylar has another question. Favorite SpongeBob episode?
Band Geeks.
My favorite is, Just One Bite. When Squidward tries his first Krabby Patty and then he starts sneaking them and then his legs, he explodes and his legs fall off.
I don't know any names to any SpongeBob episodes, although I have watched them and I've enjoyed it. Immediately all I could think of is when David Hasselhoff was the surfboard in the movie.
That was good.
I think I'm a little too old. I think I missed that boat.
That came out like 99, I think, is when that premiered. Yeah, so that would have been.
So I was, that was a year before I got, yeah, I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Ah, Collier J.
Oh, I like this guy.
If you could.
Hold on. Didn't we go through a whole process of like, isn't it?
Collier.
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 Collier. I think it's Collier.
Coiler asks, if you could own any car from a movie / TV show, what would it be? Mine is the Bluesmobile.
Oh, from the Blues Brothers? Mm.
Dude, it's Kit from Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
He was Siri before Siri was Siri.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is pretty easy for me, but it would be the Batman 1989 Batmobile.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Mine is a toss-up between either TC's helicopter or the red... Was it a Mustang? From Magnum P.I.
Okay.
That's what, honestly, side note, that's one of my favorite shows. I've seen every single episode.
Magnum P.I., nice.
Tom Selleck, that big bushy mustache and those little tiny shorts he used to wear, his jorts. Mm.
Famously almost played Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Passed on it.
Turned it down.
Knucklehead.
Was a good baseball player, too.
Mm-hmm.
Almost played professionally.
He always, in Magnum P.I., always wears Detroit Tigers hat. Yep.
Number two, less of a question, more of a fun story. I recently just got hired at Universal Studios Orlando in their art department, and the guy interviewing me was a fan of the show.
Wait, of our show?
Yes. We got an on topic of podcasts, and I mentioned that Conspiracy Therapy is my top three favorites, so we talked about you guys for like 10 minutes afterwards. I think you all gave me some brownie points for the interview. You're welcome. We will now take 10% of your pay as your agents.
I'd take some free tickets to Universal Studios.
Hey, you know what?
Oh, shit.
Wow, that's weird. I never thought of like somebody working somewhere. Well, I guess everybody's got a job. But it's
not everybody.
Larry's a good blowjob.
A blowjob
guy.
Raider.
Judge.
BJJ. BJJ.com rating all the blows.
I just lost the last quick. Can you read that last question, Josh? Yes. I just lost it.
Nathan DeHaye asks, "Hey there, pal. What's your favorite dipping sauce, butter or ranch?"
Butter.
Newsflash, buddy. It's a trick question because there's butter ranch.
No, it's blue cheese.
Favorite dip is probably going to go with my...
I don't know. It depends on what I'm dipping.
Yeah. If I'm going to dip something, it's going to be probably kettle chips into some sort of... No, I know what it is. It's the Costco spinach and artichoke dip.
Oh, so yeah.
You're like, yeah, if you got tortillas, you're going with the spinach dip. Mm-hmm. If it's potato chips, it's a French onion. If it's mm-hmm. if it's vegetables, it's a ranch. If it's mm-hmm. chicken wings, it's blue cheese.
Oh,
I defer back to ranch is like my go-to for like chicken nuggets, breadsticks, pizza, any vegetables. Like if there aren't any other options,
right?
Like ranch is a pretty solid favorite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
We also really like the buffalo sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, we like Frank's.
Hot sauce is good.
Mm-hmm. Hot sauce, sriracha is good, too.
Yeah, sriracha.
Spinach and artichoke, though.
Well, yeah, that's been your...
That's a big old, fat old mail sack.
I hope I handled it well.
Sack.
You did. Segment stays.
Well, I have got... What?
Oh, after this, I have a 5-star. Just so
okay. What do you want to do first?
I can do the 5-star. I have it. I do have it pulled up.
Okay. I have the voicemail as well pulled up.
You have a voicemail? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wait, hold on. My phone's being weird.
AKA, let's do the phone call.
Did you listen to it? Is it an actual? Okay.
Yeah, I did.
That was so fucking funny.
Yeah, I ran upon that when I was reviewing stuff for the best of.
Oh, did you?
Like, you moron.
That was good.
All right, so I guess we're doing...
5-star review.
Don't think we forgot about you, Mr. Holefield. Chris Holefield, who says, there's a podcast in the great state of Michigan that never fails to make me laugh again and again. The Beard the Skeptic, the Aluma Mommy, and Rad Dad 2019 have turned me into a conspiracy therapy fiend. And I won't stop, can't stop listening to this group of hooligans following a dream who every Monday reconvene and drive this well-tuned and oiled machine so smoothly that it feels like getting the best candy each and every Halloween. Giving anything less than 5 stars would be like trying to holler at a dime piece from your drunk uncle's hoopty car. Grab a beer and listen here. Cheers, all my interweb peers.
I like rhymes. If the glove don't fit.
That was beautiful, man.
That was great job.
I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you for your 5-star shout out.
Well, I've got a...
voicemails.
We get them so infrequently that I didn't even know we had a drop for that.
I remember it now, but I do love it. Mm-hmm, me too. So, listen.
That's been your voicemail.
Was that what it was?
What?
Oh, God. You want me to repeat? Oh, no.
Did he butt dial us?
No, you got to listen. As it cycles back around.
But,
butt sex in the butt.
Well, thank you, loyal listener.
Mystery listener.
That's beautiful, man.
Oh, my God.
Somebody had
someone took the time to call
937-504-9504.
That's
937-504-9504.
And left that message.
Beautiful. Well done to whoever that is. I thought
that was your son, the one that we met, the 10-year-old that we mentioned earlier.
He knows all about.
But then I thought that's a crime.
Yes,
indeed it is.
Oh boy,
oh boy. Well, that's the episode.
Sure was.
Everybody ready for bed?
Yes,
Larry, you got to work again tomorrow.
I know, worky, but they're gonna be at my house. At sunrise to start putting on a new roof.
Gross.
Mm. So fun. Mm. That'll be a hell of a way to wake up.
Yep.
It will be. And I know the dog won't bark.
Dog's at mom. My mom's.
Oh. So you pre-planned. So
he's getting spoiled rotten for the next 2 days.
Nice.
So Larry will be bark.
Right. Like he always does.
Yes.
Anyways. Woof. Does anybody have anything they want to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
I like to lick my balls.
It's probably one of the best Queen covers I've ever heard.
That's the legacy I leave for my children.
Butt sex.
Dad, why did mom sing about the dog licking his penis?
Well, you see.
To the tune of Queen.
Hey, for anyone who is still listening after this super long episode, you know what I learned today? It's a fun fact to go out on. Did you know that on set of the movie Chronicles of Riddick, Vin Diesel taught Judi Dench how to play Dungeons and Dragons, and she went and played it with her kids or her grandkids after she learned.
Wow. Mm-hmm. The more you know. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing families together. That's right. Good. I've been trying to do that with my girls. So
play D&D?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I have a starter set. So
nice. I'm over here just playing Uno.
Still. But hey.
I can't put it down.
If it
works for you.
I see they got a game called DOS. No. Made by the same company.
Really?
Is that true?
Yeah, that's serious.
Wow.
It's.
Well, they finally decided to make a sequel.
They did. It took a while.
Did.
It's twice the fun.
Interesting.
They said it's the number two played card game for families or something like that. I was like, did Josh write that? Yes, I did.
All right, guys. Well, you have a great one. We'll see you next week in another episode of the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Have a great one. Damn, you're just so beautiful. All the things that do to you. When you come inside, we could have a little fun. Damn, you're just so beautiful. All the things I do to you. When you come inside, we could have a little fun.
Presentation of Beer City Media.